What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Hey, Future of Everything listeners. We've got a quick question for you before getting into today's episode, which is all about shipping. Would you be willing to wait longer for a delivery if it meant the boat transporting it emitted less carbon dioxide? Why or why not? Let us know. Our email is foepodcast@wsj.com. Thanks for listening. Now, onto the show. This past summer, a cargo ship called the Pyxis Ocean set sail from Shanghai, China. Its voyage was long, but pretty straightforward. Travel to Singapore to load up on fuel and food, cross the Pacific Ocean and travel around the southernmost tip of South America, load up on grain in Brazil, and finally sail northeast across the Atlantic Ocean to Poland. Oh, did I say set sail? I meant it. Because the Pyxis Ocean is partly powered by wind. It actually has sails, but they're not like any you've ever seen. They're called wind wings.
Think of our wing on these big boats is like an aircraft wing inverted vertically.
That's John Cooper, the CEO of BAR Technologies. His company designed the wind wings, 123-foot-tall structures made of steel and fiber-reinforced plastic panels that pivot just like the flaps on a plane. I asked him how he'd describe them to his grandma.
Grandmother, imagine 10 stories up on that building opposite you.
He took me literally.
So it's a really big piece of kit, and we're going to put that on a boat. And guess what? We're going back to, not quite your day, grandmother, because you're not that old, but we're actually going back to the sailing ages.
Because even though shipping mostly left wind power behind more than a century ago, sails are starting to make a comeback. From the Wall Street Journal, this is the future of everything. I'm Danny Lewis. Retrofitting cargo ships with sails might do more than make maritime shipping greener. They might also make it cheaper, which could change how the extremely complex shipping industry works. We're casting off now. Come aboard right after this break.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
I'll be honest. When I first heard about cargo ships with sails, I had a really hard time imagining them. In my mind, sailboats are small, swift racing vessels. Or clipper ships with rigging and canvas sails flapping in the breeze. Maybe even a cannon or two.
If I say a wind ship, you think Jack Sparrow and Pirates of the Caribbean and, you know, all of that. You don't think of a huge ore carrier for one of the largest mining giants in the world.
Gavin Allwright is the founder and secretary general of the International Windship Association, which advocates for the small but growing cargo sailing industry. But before he started pushing for a return to sails, he worked with fishermen and other people who own small ships in the developing world.
I would see impoverished fishermen unable to go out and get a catch because they couldn't afford the fuel to put in their vessel. Whereas on the horizon, you'd see a rich Western yacht gliding by using free energy, and it just didn't make any sense to me.
That's why he started advocating to bring sails back to shipping, or as contemporary shipwrights call it, wind-assisted propulsion.
A wind assist vessel is a motor vessel with wind on it to help the motors. So it's not operated as a wind ship, it's operated as a motor ship with wind help.
Cargo vessels began shifting away from wind power in the late 19th century with the rise of steam, coal, and oil-powered ships. And it's been at least 70 years since the last major commercial cargo vessels relied on sails. That's how we got from ships that looked something like Jack Sparrow's Black Pearl to the giant stubby bulk carriers that dominate today's ports. But while cargo ships may not be as romantic as schooners and clipper ships, they are critical to modern trade.
Hitting deadlines is one of the most important criteria in the shipping and trade industry.
That's Wall Street Journal senior reporter Costas Paris. He covers the global shipping industry. And he says the fuel that makes those deadlines possible is also really bad for the environment.
Ships are still powered by oil, dirty oil, which is the worst pollutant.
What Costas calls dirty or heavy oil is a refinery byproduct. It's full of sulfur, and it gives off fumes and particles that scientists say are bad for human health and contribute to climate change.
The entire shipping industry contributes about 3% of global CO2 emissions.
That's about as much as the global aviation industry. Now, regulators from the UN's International Maritime Organization and the European Union are trying to crack down. Their goal is to get the shipping industry to become carbon neutral by 2050, primarily through alternative fuels like methanol, ammonia, and even hydrogen.
The European Union, for instance, is going to include shipping in its carbon emission taxing system. In 5 years' time, the taxes will be as high as the price of using alternative fuels. So it will not pay for ship owners to use heavy oil and pay all the extra fees that come with it.
Costas says alternative fuels can be really expensive. Some are at least double the price of bunker fuel, which is one reason that big companies like food and agriculture giant Cargill are investing in developing and prototyping wind assist technology.
We actually started experimenting with wind more than 10 years ago. We tried with kites, and it was an interesting exercise, which in the end of the day didn't work for a host of reasons.
Jan Dieleman is the president of Cargill Ocean Transportation, the company's maritime shipping wing.
We decided to look at wind again because it makes a lot of sense, right? It's a free fuel in the end of the day. We also felt that because we did it before and it didn't work, that should not be a reason to not try again.
While bunker fuel is relatively cheap, it accounts for more than a third of ships' operating costs. A metric ton of it costs between $500 and $1,000 on average, according to the marine fuel-focused publication Ship and Bunker. A medium-sized Kamsar Max bulk carrier, the same model as the Pyxis Ocean, can carry up to 530,000 gallons of heavy fuel and consumes more than 11,000 gallons a day. Even on the cheapest end of the scale, that's at least $12,000 a day spent on fuel alone. And that's with the dirty stuff. But Dieleman says sails might save shipping companies a lot of fuel.
The expectation with two sails that we have is it should save around 20%. If you put a third one and you optimize a bit more, you should be able to get to 30%.
And if you're looking at those replacement fuels, Dieleman says the savings are even better, especially since Cargill has about 700 ships in its fleet.
If we can save a couple of tons of fuels, that is a payback that makes economic sense. And that is the beauty, I think, of wind, because it doesn't only save carbon, but it also saves fuel.
But while the classic clipper ships and schooners were designed for sails, modern cargo ships like the Pyxis Ocean weren't. And that makes installing high-tech sails tricky.
So when you're designing a wing for a race boat, the drag of the hull of that race boat is very small.
John Cooper again, from BAR Technologies, which designed the sails on the Pyxis Ocean. Before this project, members of the team worked on top-of-the-line, extremely aerodynamic sailboats racing in the America's Cup. That's one of the premier sailing competitions. It's kind of like going from designing a Formula One racer to building a big rig truck.
The challenge is a very big, very different one because the drag of that hull is colossal in comparison to the aerodynamic drag of the wing.
Remember how we compared these new sails to airplane wings earlier? Cooper says the wind wings work the same way.
What the pilot is doing is creating the most pressure differential between the top of the wing and the bottom of the wing, and therefore the most upward lift. And then when you invert the whole wing vertically, like our wing solution, then you're pushing the vessel forward.
And then the wind wings have to be installed on a vessel that, again, wasn't designed for it. There are things on deck, like hatches into the cargo hold, that have to be accessible by the crew. So BAR Technologies designed big metal plates to mount the sails on
that sit about 9 feet above the deck. And then the sails also fold down horizontally for when the ship goes into port or encounters a storm.
And it folds down into a V-shaped catch point on the deck for loading. And so it's a really interesting sight.
Then there's the question of how you pilot the ship with these wings. Because modern cargo ships are more like airplanes or big rigs than classic sailing ships and require very different work from the crew. Cooper says a lot of the fine details of operating the wind wings are handled by computers.
It's all automatic. We have a good array of sensors both on the wing and off the wing, which are detecting the wind speed and the wind direction. And it's putting the wings live into the right position to give the right amount of thrust and changing the shape of the wing accordingly if the wind changes or the wind speed changes.
And if a sudden storm hits too fast for the crew to lower the wings, Cooper says they'll automatically power down and just spin about. It's like letting out the ropes that pull traditional sails taut, so they flap around instead of catching the wind.
The guys hate it when I say flapping around, but that's the reality.
The Pyxis Ocean was the first ship that BAR Technologies retrofitted with wind wings, but it's not alone. In October, another ship called the Burge Olympus launched with four of BAR's wind wings. It's a Newcastle Max-class vessel, which has more than twice the cargo capacity of the Pyxis. And Cooper says more companies are asking about getting their own wind wings.
I have 63 owners that we're currently talking to, and they're all waiting for the results of the Pyxis Ocean. But it is about influencing all the stakeholders.
Which could be an even bigger challenge than designing the high-tech sails, because the technology is also running into the complex web of companies and contracts that make up the maritime shipping industry. That's coming up next after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
The miracle of modern shipping is the fact that so many millions of tons of goods can travel thousands of miles and, for the most part, get there on time. But when it goes wrong, one delay can screw up global supply chains. Like in 2021, when traffic through Egypt's Suez Canal came to a standstill after a ship called the Ever Given ran aground.
The ship as long as the Empire State Building still has to be pulled straight before it can finally move up the canal.
There's about $3 billion worth of goods that normally would traverse this canal every single day.
It's one of the main arteries for ships carrying goods around the globe. It was completely blocked by this ship. Basically, capitalism had a heart attack over this last week.
The canal was blocked for 6 days as salvage crews worked to get the quarter-mile-long Ever Given unstuck. A lot of shipments were delayed, but tight delivery schedules meant some cargo ships couldn't wait, and instead had to take other routes, like going the long way around Africa.
Now, that's a lot further, and you're going to burn a lot of fuel, but the winds are tremendous around there.
Gavin Allwright, from the International Windship Association again.
So actually, if you had windships sitting there, they wouldn't have even waited. They may not even go through the Suez Canal, because they've got a free energy source that's pretty strong around that area.
Sounds great, right? Especially if, as we mentioned before, sails could save up to 20 to 30% of the fuel. But here's where the shipping industry itself starts making things complicated. Because most of the time, the company that owns the ship is different from the company using it. WSJ reporter Costas Paris says the ship's owners would have to decide whether they want to install and pay for retrofitted sails, while the charterers, who typically cover fuel costs, would be the ones saving money.
It will take convincing owners with substantive data that you get proven savings. If that picks up speed, the owner will have no choice but install sails.
The types of ships and cargo they carry also means not all of them can be retrofitted with sails. Bulk ships and tankers can use wind power because most of their cargo is stored below decks. But it's trickier for container ships.
The containers can go to 10, 15 floors high, right? So you cannot have the sales because they are the big users. They are the biggest fleets, and sales will not work for them because of the structure of the ships.
Some companies are trying to figure out how to build future container ships with enough space for sails among the stacks. But those are still in the works and years away from taking to the seas. Both Jan Dielemann from Cargill and John Cooper from BAR Technologies declined to say how much it costs to develop and install the wind wings on the Pyxis Ocean. But the cost-benefit conversation is top of mind for a lot of companies working in wind propulsion.
It was really interesting because once we brought a ship owner to the table, that really unearthed, really revealed their anxieties about the technology.
Diane Gilpin is the founder and CEO of Smart Green Shipping, another company building high-tech sails for cargo ships.
It's their property, and we're kind of rocking up and going, hey, let's stick these things on it. And, well, they're like, whoa, hang on a minute. You need to feel that this is technology that's proven and workable.
Gilpin says her company's prototype sail system is being installed on a small bulk carrier named the Pacific Grebe, after a kind of water bird. She says safety and workability is critical for operating this ship, since its main job is hauling nuclear waste.
A nuclear waste carrier needs to be the safest in the world. So we successfully install this ship, then I think we give the industry an awful lot of confidence that a regular bulk carrier moving grain or something will be safe with our technology deployed on it.
One solution Gilpin is exploring to cut down the price is to lease out the sails instead of selling them outright.
So it doesn't need a lot of big stuff to be sunk into the body of the ship. So we're not taking any cargo space out of the ship. And so we can install it pretty quickly and, critically, deinstall it pretty quickly.
That could address concerns about the capital costs of installing sails on cargo ships. But if sails do take off again, they could be the start of a shift in an industry that Gavin Allwright, the windship advocate, says is built around rushing to wait.
We rush across the ocean, and then we might sit there for 2 weeks because there's no berth to unload. So we've burned a huge amount of energy to then just wait there. So why not slow down?
Even if wind power is just supplementing the engines, it would make the direct routes the shipping industry has used for decades less profitable. Instead, ships might have to do more of what they used to do, follow the breeze.
We've always had natural wind corridors, and we know them. We know where they go, and they are very, very predictable. Have a more flexible way of arriving. Yes, it'll cost a little more to pay the crew, but the crew costs are quite small these days in comparison with the fuel costs. So it's rethinking some of the logistics.
Allwright says it might start with bulk goods freighters, like the Pyxis Ocean and the Burge Olympus, which already have some more flexibility in the supply chain than container ships carrying consumer goods, like electronics and cars. Between the new regulations on carbon emissions, expensive alternative fuels, and demand for zero-emission fleets, there's a growing need for a new way to get ships from port to port. And that could mean, in a decade or two, commercial ports might once again be filled with masts and sails.
Climate change doesn't wait for people. This is coming down the train track, and it's coming fast. So there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of volatility, and wind is the only thing, the only propulsive energy force that is actually predictable in that sense.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. Stephanie Ilgenfritz is the editorial director of The Future of Everything. This episode was produced by me, Danny Lewis. Our fact checker is Aparna Nathan. Michael Laval and Jessica Fenton are our sound designers and wrote our theme music. Catherine Millsop is our supervising producer. Aisha Al-Muslim is our development producer. Scott Salloway and Chris Zinsley are the deputy editors. And Philana Patterson is the head of news audio for The Wall Street Journal. Like the show? Tell your friends and leave us a 5-star review on your favorite platform. Thanks for listening.